It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 98 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? I have a couple of new airline stories for you, including a wheelchair basketball team that got royally screwed, and a predicted change that will elate half of Flyers and enrage the other half. At 6:15, it's the first of my two-segment conversation with comedian and actor Miss Pat, ahead of her show at the Paramount this Thursday night, Moon Tower Comedy Festival. And in mere seconds, the transfer portal is now open in college sports, which is having a major effect on the Longhorn basketball roster for next season. And if we have time, ESPN came out with a new mock three-round NFL draft. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, we are in day two of the spring transfer window being open. Day two of 14, I believe. I think this is also a two-week window. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's really hard to care too much about the transfer portal, specifically as it pertains to college football. There is the rare player who enters the portal, who is maybe of intrigue, who might help the Longhorns roster out, or who is harming another team who I don't care much for, who I like to see them fail time and time again. Texas A&M, Oklahoma. There's some other schools on that list too. But generally speaking, I can only get so excited about the transfer portal. And it's just because of the sheer amount of player movement over the last few years has left me, shell-shocked isn't the right word, it's left me a little bit numb to the whole process. If there's an area where it probably does matter a little bit more, it has to do with, yeah, guys that you are getting in from the transfer portal, but I feel like a majority of those most important players are during that end-of-season window. Texas has lost a couple of guys to the transfer portal in the last 2 days, guys whose paths weren't all that clear in terms of getting to play college football at the University of Texas. In one case, a guy who was a part of the problem with Tavondre Sweat's legal troubles, not to exonerate Tavondre because he was a part of that also. You wonder how much that plays into things with Samaje Burrell, the linebacker who will be playing college ball someplace else now. But I'm glad it's a big deal for others. It's a little bit like high school football recruiting, if I'm being honest. I'm glad so many other people care about this so I can care a little bit less. And I can know who to read, to listen to, who to trust, to help me understand which of these guys are worth the damn and which guys aren't necessarily, or which guys you don't necessarily need to be too sad about leaving the Longhorns program. And on that note, it's on the basketball side that I think things are most interesting right now for Texas fans. You got three seemingly big-time transfer portal prospects. I guess technically yesterday, but news that broke over the weekend. A couple guys from Indiana State, Arkansas's leading scorer from last year, a couple of guards and a forward. And you end up losing a couple of guys over the next day. Now, this did break before yesterday's show. I didn't talk about it, though. So we'll talk about both of these guys right now. By the way, Caden Shedrick, I did mention this yesterday, but just so everybody knows, Caden Shedrick is coming back to Austin for his final year for Rodney Terry and staff next season. And I think if he can stay healthy, yes, a big if, that can be a net positive for Rodney Terry and this basketball team. But two guys with all the potential in the world who just time and time again fell short because they just weren't consistent enough on a game-in and game-out basis. Both have been here for at least a couple of years, and both will be playing that next season someplace else now. And I'm talking about Dylan Mitchell, who announced his intentions yesterday, entering the transfer portal, not going pro, because give me a break if that were the decision. He has completely ruined his NBA draft stock over the last 2 years. probably could have still gotten drafted last year, although that would have been one of those potential with a capital P draft picks that the NBA has fallen in love with over the last couple of decades that I would guarantee you would not end up panning out. And then Tyrese Hunter, I think it was announced a little bit earlier today that he is entering the transfer portal for the second time in his college basketball career. Started at Iowa State, took the Cyclones to a Sweet 16 as a true freshman, and then unfortunately, over the last few years, it just didn't tie together well enough for him. And Tyrese Hunter needs to go someplace where he is going to be the guy. He is going to be the no doubt about it point guard. I don't care who your scoring guard is. Tyrese Hunter is the guy with the ball in his hands most possessions, bringing it up court. And with that, we can almost completely, maybe it is completely, close the book on the Chris Beard era here in Austin. And this is fully Rodney Terry's team right now. This is going to be a huge season for him too, and help to dictate just how much longer he's going to be in Austin. I've seen it argued, and I tend to agree with this, that Terry is going all in on next season. Because you think about it, the guys that he brought in over the weekend, those guys all have a single season of eligibility left. Trey Johnson, the talented five-star, who really shined in that McDonald's All-American game a couple weeks ago. He's going to be a one-and-done guy. And really looks the part, too. I'm not always sold on five stars necessarily, but you watch him play. The highlight reel matters a certain amount, but watching him in game action, it was impressive for at least that one McDonald's All-American game. So Rodney Terry knows that. He is bringing a veteran presence in around him, guys who know how to be productive at the college level. And we'll see if Trey Johnson becomes this team's star next year. And I think wiping the slate clean for a couple of guys that people have started asking more and more questions over the last couple of years, it does make sense. I'm disappointed, especially in Tyrese's case, because I saw what he was capable of at Iowa State. And you just never saw that, unfortunately, here in Austin. Or at least not consistently enough. Part of the problem, Marcus Carr, secondary ball handler last year, who kind of became the guy throughout large chunks of games last season. And then this year, it was Max Asemus who did that. Prolific scorer who also liked to have the ball in his hands. And Tyrese Hunter, whatever it is, engagement or whatever else, he thrives when he is that guy. But he was also too passive at times. So it's up to Tyrese to really step up and demand that role for his future team. And so best of luck to both of those guys. It does worry me that if Rodney Terry doesn't maximize his team's ability, I say worry, I don't care that much. Although I'm talking about it right now, I don't spend that level of emotional capital on college basketball. But this is going to be make or break for Rodney Terry, because you are going to be turning over pretty much all of your productivity off of next year's team. So can you make a run? Absolutely have to get to weekend two, barring some sort of catastrophic situation. And if you are not pressing for a Final Four, that's probably going to be a problem amongst those who pay closest attention to this basketball team, who have been asking questions about Terry really going back to when he was the interim coach last season and leading Texas to a spot that they hadn't been in more than 15 years, making it to an Elite Eight and getting oh so close to a Final Four. Those who feel like there should have been more of an open coaching search before he was handed the gig, I would say that he actually earned the gig with how he was able to stabilize things and, yes, get this team to that point, a point that they had not been in 16 years. That includes Chris Beard having 1 year to do so, and I realize these things take time. And that's probably the point with how the roster is going to look this next season. There seems like there's a lot of talent, but it takes teams time to gel. It's a big key in what UConn has been able to do these last couple of seasons. And there's no guarantee that this talented roster is going to do much more than last year's roster. All right, so that is it for the sports talk for the time being. Coming up next, it is the first of a two-segment conversation with comedian Miss Pat. She's at Moon Tower Comedy Festival here in a couple of days, performing at the Paramount on Thursday. We're going to talk comedy and more coming up on the other side here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.
Boomtower Comedy Festival started last week and is continuing all week long this week, with the finale happening Sunday, April 21st. Those shows that you can expect to see a little bit later in the week include Marc Maron at the Paramount on Thursday, and that's the early show on Thursday, the 7 o'clock show. The late show on Thursday is with my next guest, the very talented Miss Pat. Not only is she a stand-up comedian, she also is the star of the Miss Pat Show, three seasons of that, with a fourth season coming out May 23rd. Miss Pat Settles It. She does the Pat Down with Miss Pat podcast. And yes, the Ya Girl Done Made It tour is coming through Austin at Moontower Comedy Festival this Thursday, April 18th at the Paramount. Go to austintheater.org to snag tickets. Miss Pat, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm in the middle of a building a house, but I'm okay. I'm stuck in a closet. So I was like, this is the only quiet place I could get today.
Well, how is the home build coming along? I know you've been talking about it on your podcast and some others as well. This is your dream home that you and your husband are getting to build for y'all's extensive family. Is everything up to snuff so far in your mind?
It's been rough, but we almost there. So I can't complain. I was a GC on the project. So we made some mistakes, but we're here now.
That's right. If you ever do it again, those are mistakes that you're hopefully going to be avoiding the next time, right?
I can build your home better than I built my home. Take my word.
So I'm excited for you coming to Moontower again. I mean, you've been to Austin countless times in the past, and you are playing at the Paramount Theater this Thursday, the 18th at 9:30. Tickets at austintheater.org. And you went on your first theater tour last fall. You were excited about it at the time. I haven't really heard an update since then, though. So how was it making the adjustment from going to a 200 to 300 seat club to theaters that sometimes were seating upwards of 2,000 people?
I'm not going to lie. In the beginning, it was scary because you have a whole weekend to sell those tickets versus one night. But I actually like theaters. I do. And the thing with me, I think what I miss about clubs, because they're so intimate, so yeah. You get to go out and meet the people. Well, I still do meet and greets. I just come out and meet everybody. And I know a lot of talent has gotten away from that, but I like people. I love hearing different stories. And I'm a comedian. You want to hear those things because you might just find a diamond in the rough.
No question about that. And you're right. I was thinking about that. The party that you've thrown the last couple of years for your fans and how you really do make that effort to touch each and every person who has taken the time and maybe a little bit of financial commitment to come and see you in return. Is that just your attempt to give back to people who have allowed you so much in your own life?
That is my attempt to give back. And, you know, I want to show appreciation. I can't reach out and touch everybody. Everybody can't come to the party, but it's just my way of saying thank you, you know, and I try to have a relationship with just about all the fans, which I can't, but I also let them know that I'm human. So I have, like, if you come in my inbox, I might answer you back.
By the same token, if you're going there on Thursday, don't yell out. She'll talk to you at the end of the show. She's got a show to perform herself. And it's a weird place that we find ourselves in 2024 with stand-up comedy, Miss Pat, because on the one hand, comedy, I don't know if it's ever been more popular. On the other hand, I think a lot of people who are new to the art form come to shows thinking that the crowd work clips that maybe got them to notice a comedian in the first place entitles them to become a part of the show. But the reality is you've got an hour that you've probably worked your butt off for the last 6 months, year, maybe even more than that. And them yelling random stuff out in the middle of that is very disruptive to you and then everybody else trying to watch the show around them, too.
You know, I used to post crowd work clips. That's why I stopped. Because people will run, just come to the show and start a whole conversation. When people bought a ticket, they don't want to hear this crap you yelling out. So, you know, I went back and forth with my team. They was like, oh, but the crowd work was working. Not for me. I want you to come and listen to this hour that I've worked out, that I've traveled, that I went to open mic for and beat up to get right for you. I don't have time to be yelling out. And I tell people all the time, I'm not the one that you want to yell out because I might not say something nice back.
It may not be worthy or it may not be appropriate for social media when it's all said and done.
Exactly. And the last thing you want me to do is post you and me going out. So I tell people up front, shut the hell up. I don't care if it's your birthday. You can tell me after the show and we can say happy birthday to you. But nobody cares. It's your birthday. It's a lot of people's birthday today.
Exactly. So you've been to Austin countless times in the past, as I mentioned. You're a regular participant at Moon Tower Comedy Club. What is it that you love about getting to perform here in Austin, Miss Pat?
Man, good weather. Good people. The Mexican food is off the chain.
Yep.
I don't think I ever had it bad, and I love Mexican food. I just like coming to Texas. I almost moved to Dallas with my husband, John General, but we chose Indiana. So Texas is one of the places I like coming. The weather is always nice, and the people, it's the South. People just, like Atlanta, they love to have a good time. And I'm a Colts fan, so I could never, I hated living in Indiana.
Yeah, Colts fans are a weird bunch. You're a Falcons fan. Are you excited that Kirk Cousins is now your starting quarterback, considering all the weapons he's got around him now?
Child, everybody had weapons that come here. It seemed like they run out of bullets. So I'm not going to get – hey, baby, I tell them all the time, a Falcon fan is like waiting on your real daddy to come back. It may or may not happen. So I'm not going to get excited. The car might not pull up. Oh, I'm always going with hope. I'm a season ticket holder. I mean, I will slap you about the Falcons, but I also want to be. I also would like to slap the Falcons sometime. So you know, they say, "Oh my God, this is our Super Bowl year." Whatever. I'm gonna keep my season tickets, but I'm gonna also keep what I close because it might not happen.
Well, there's actually a lot of Falcons fans here in Austin now because they drafted Bijan Robinson this last year, and unfortunately, Arthur Smith was just a complete moron in how he chose to use him last football season. Hopefully now that Raheem Morris is there, they're going to unlock Bijan's potential because he has a chance to be the best running back in the National Football League, no question.
Is Bijan from Austin?
Yeah, he's a UT guy. He's actually from Arizona originally, but he played his college ball for the Texas Longhorns.
Oh, I got on a picture with Bijan. I have a floor seat, so I talk to him sometime. I'm going to hit him up there. So I'm headed to your school hometown this weekend.
That's right. Yeah, look, he's an awesome football player. He's an even better human being. So if you get a chance to get him to know him a little bit more, you obviously do because you talk to him close to the field like that. So yeah, Bijan's an awesome dude. I mean, easy to root for in a variety of capacities. And now that he may actually have a head coach who respects his talent on the field, that might help y'all win a few more games.
Well, we're going to keep praying. Let's talk about comedy.
Let's talk a little comedy. Yeah, exactly. Well, Falcons comedic at times, the Cowboys comedic at times. Your life, you have turned it into a pretty enormous comedy career. You've talked a lot about your past, your upbringing, the fact that you had a couple of kids, before the age of 14 or 15. You were a drug dealer in your teenage years. You ended up going to prison a couple of times as a result of that. But I very rarely hear you talk about some of the things that I really appreciated in your memoir that came out a couple years ago titled Rabbit. For instance, why was a third grade teacher named Miss Troop a hugely important influence on your childhood, Miss Pat?
You say, why was she named Miss Troop?
Why was she a hugely important influence on your childhood?
I think because she understood the household that I went to. So she I think she saw a child in need. And instead of looking the other way, she opened her arms. And, you know, she was that mother figure when I went to school every day. She gave me something that I wasn't getting at home, and she knew it. I mean, I tell teachers all the time, if you just pay attention, that child might not be bad. That child might be reaching out for something. But we're so quick in this society to just push people away. And especially kids say, oh, he's troubled. Oh, he's this. Oh, they this. And, you know, and you just don't know how you're running them. And I think with Miss Troop, she saw something in me. And she saw that I needed a need. And she filled a need for me. She's the first person whoever told me you can do and be anything in this world you want to be, all you got to do is dream.
Everybody needs people pumping them full of positivity. Certainly kids are in that category too, because if you hear nothing but negativity when you're a kid, that is so harmful for your overall development.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know what light you're putting out in a child. I mean, to me, every child is born with so many light bulbs on, and as they go through society, people put them out.
Yeah.
And it takes other people to light them back. And I think with Miss Truth, she gave me hope. She, you know, even though I went home to a bad situation every day, she made me realize I'm not going to always be in this situation. You know, just by brushing my teeth, just by combing my hair, just by instilling the things that she said to me, just by, you know, taking up the time that she took up with me, that I didn't even get at home. And I had a mom at home.
Even though you didn't end up getting into stand-up comedy, I think, until your early 20s, you admit in this book
late 20s.
You admit that prior to that, you used comedy as a sort of defense mechanism. I think you even quoted in your book, you learned how to laugh to keep from crying. Was there a moment that helped you understand the value of that to keep you from giving up and to make sure not to just push forward, but also to thrive as a result of your sense of humor?
Well, when I was younger, you know, I got picked on a lot. I'm from the South. We had to learn how to do something called joning. People call it different from different places, you know, sides of the world. But here in Atlanta, we call it joning. So that would keep people off of you, you know, and for messing with you, because they knew I had a leaked tongue. So as I got into comedy, I realized, you know, I never went and got counseling or anything like that, but comedy was counseling for me. It healed me. It allowed me to sit there and say all the stuff that I would have said to a counselor. And instead of somebody just staring at me like I'm crazy, I got 200 drunk people and we're laughing together.
That's right.
Because if I went to counseling, I would have been crying. But I was at a comedy club when I started confessing, so we was all laughing together. Because it was so many people, it's people in the audience. Just because they haven't been through what you've been through, they probably know somebody who's been through that, or they've been through it themselves.
Or it's a completely new experience to them, and you're opening a world to them that they were completely unfamiliar with prior to you talking about it.
And that too.
Let's get into that a little bit more on the other side, Miss Pat. She is Miss Pat, taking part in Moontower Comedy Festival, headlining at the Paramount, The Late Show on Thursday. Go to austintheater.org to grab tickets. Coming up, one more segment with Miss Pat on the other side.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
One more segment with the very funny Miss Pat, not only a stand-up comedian, but she is also a TV star. The Miss Pat Show has 3 seasons out right now through BET Plus. You can stream it on Amazon Prime with season 4 coming May 23rd, and Miss Pat Settles It, also on BET, where it's essentially Miss Pat as Judge Judy. Also check out her podcast, The Pat Down with Miss Pat, and see her in person at Moontower Comedy Festival this Thursday at 9:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at austintheater.org. And Ms. Pat, continuing the conversation from last segment, one of the reasons why I'm such a big fan of your comedy, not just your stand-up, but the TV show, my wife and I, we ended up subscribing to BET Plus because I wanted to see season 1 of your shows so badly, and seasons 2 and 3 have not disappointed either. Like, you talk about real stuff and you have earnest conversations about them, and we are in desperate need for that right now. I think it started to improve a little bit over these last couple of years. But especially in the era of COVID, we became afraid to have disagreeable conversations with one another or even talk about the difficult to discuss things. That's why it's crucial for those who have the capability of doing so to do so. And I think that clearly you're in that category. So thank you for that.
Well, I'm not trying to tell people just because we do things different, don't mean we can't communicate. Like I posted just 2 days ago, I posted Siri was hot. And I'm wearing a Gucci hat. They was like, well, how can you complain about cereal and you got on a Gucci hat? I'm like, this Gucci hat ain't buying me cereal. Hey, y'all, I'm in the same economy as you guys. And they was like, wait, stop, vote for Biden. Well, what do my vote have to do with this? Because if you can respect my vote, I can respect your vote. And the video went viral and everybody's arguing and I'm a welfare queen and I'm poor and I'm this. And I'm like, wow, really? Y'all gonna take my video and just take it out of proportion like that? All because I said cereal was high enough. I'm a black woman wearing a Gucci hat. Oh my God, don't you dare wear something designer and complain about $7 a box cereal. I believe other people, rich people, and I'm not rich. I believe rich people complain too. They do it in a different way.
There you go. So you said that you were successful at slinging crack because your customer service game was so on point. What is good customer service in the crack game, Miss Pat?
I think I had Chick-fil-A customer service selling crack because I was I did forget this. I didn't say please and thank you, but I did say thank you. I didn't say I'm at your service because I didn't want the police to lock me up. I can't always be at your service. But I just treated, you know, even though, you know, people was buying crack at that time, you know, people thought because you was on drugs that they could treat you any kind of way. I always just treated people like a human being. I can't tell you, you know, what to spend your money on or what you like. Thank you for spending your money with me. But I'm quite sure Chick-fil-A say the same thing when I go through their drive-thru 20 times a week. You know, we ain't gonna tell you this chicken ain't that healthy, but we appreciate you keep coming by. So it ain't no different.
Well, plus they are very quick with getting those orders out. You see that line, it's wrapped around the building. You assume you're going to sit there for an hour and 15 minutes later, you're driving away.
And that's how I serve my crack. Quick.
You've been shot twice in your life, once in the head and once through your... You've also had four kids, I believe, if I'm counting correctly. What hurts the worst between those three things?
Child labor is very painful, but when you get shot and your adrenaline is going, it really hurts the next day. Like, I didn't even know I was shot in my boot, but the next day it was so painful. And plus, I'm very top heavy. So the way they shot me, it drug. You know, when I don't have on a bra, my top drags the ground. So it was very painful picking it up, putting peroxide on it, and just nursing it back.
Oh, you didn't even go to the hospital for that.
I did go to the hospital. Okay. Yeah, it was a clean, it went clean through. So it was nothing they could really do.
Gotcha. So you have Bill Clinton to thank partially for your stand-up career. It was a welfare-to-work program that helped encourage you to get into stand-up comedy through the welfare agent who said that it would be a good idea for you to get on stage. And after you got on stage, and I guess it entered your blood, you were addicted at that point. You went and bought a bunch of Richard Pryor albums to really try and learn the art form a little bit more. And you give Richard Pryor a lot of credit for helping you to understand how to tell a story. What did Richard Pryor teach you about telling a story, Miss Pat?
Richard Pryor taught me honesty, because he was, if you listen to his old, you know, CDs and stuff, watch his DVDs, it's all honesty. It's coming from the heart. He didn't care what you thought about him. He told you what went on in his life from a childhood to every day. And I started to get into Bill Cosby also, because his art form of telling a story was so unique. So I kind of studied both of them. But Richard Pryor gave me confidence to be able to say where I came from or what I've been through and not be ashamed and not worry about what people thought about me. And for me, he showed me how to craft it like in a funny form. Because if you can laugh about what you've been through, other people will laugh about it. Like, I used to tell a joke, I used to tell a bit about getting shot in the back of the head. And I used to say, well, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't his fault. It was my fault because I ducked slow. But it took me 2 years to get that together because nobody wanted to hear a woman had been shot in the back of the head. And once I said it was my fault and I ducked slow, the audience lost.
Huh. Interesting. By the way, I feel like your show, the Miss Pat Show, is kind of like a modern version of the Cosby Show. More honest and also less potential for sexual assault when the cameras aren't rolling, too. So congratulations on that.
John, we don't want each other and we don't want nobody else.
So I heard you mention on your podcast that you have a trip planned for Dubai next year. Normally you take you and your extended family and friends to a Disney theme park, but y'all are going to Dubai. I mean, what's in stock for Dubai, or why did you want to go to Dubai next year?
We went to Disney. We went to Universal, Disney Cove, and we went to Epcot this year. Mm-hmm. And so I just started, you know, as a little black girl from the inner city of Atlanta, Christmas is my favorite holiday. I put up my 12 trees, but I will always give my kids toys and they throw them away. So I said, well, you know, I'm 52 years old. I want to make memories. I want them to be able to be in a conversation. My mama took me there. And, you know, I have grandkids, and then I have four adopted kids that I have that's from my niece. So I just started this whole thing with me and my friends. I said, we put our trip on that one. We pay for it the whole year. And then we go, you know, we're going. So I pick the trip every year. I organize it. And they was like, I said, what about Dubai this year, y'all? They was like, let's do it.
I know you're not doing it for the credit, but you really are the ultimate caretaker. You obviously had kids of your own, stepkids, kids that you've adopted, kids that you've taken in. For you, as somebody who has parented over the course of decades now, what do you think the biggest challenge is for parents in 2024, Miss Pat?
The internet. You know, back in the day, you could just easily raise them. They didn't know. They only knew what was going on in the world when you allowed the world to come into your house. Now they got the world at their hand, the internet. I mean, it will make your child act and talk a different way. They get exposed to stuff so much more quicker. So I have two ninth graders that don't even have cell phones, but they go to public school where they still get exposed to crazy stuff. So I would say it would be the internet. You got to fight against what YouTube and the world is teaching them on top of what you're trying to teach them. Because what you're trying to teach them might not be as cool as what the internet is trying to teach them.
I completely agree with that answer. And just a couple more now, Ms. Pat. First, smart people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions, and at a given point in time, there tends to be one overriding question over all the others. You're obviously a very smart person. You're very accomplished as well. Is there that one question for you right now? And if so, what is it?
One question for me. What, that I would ask myself?
That you find yourself really pondering or asking yourself over and over again, yeah.
You're going to think I'm crazy for saying
this. Let's hear it.
Question I ask myself all the time, why do people think I'm famous? I just have a job. Am I famous? Well, is that the point where I can't go to the store sometime, especially Walmart, because people always stop me, and I like going to the grocery store with no bra on, and people be looking at me like, is that her? That's a crackhead. That ain't her. And my husband's like, why don't you just admit that you famous and put yourself on a bra? I don't want no bra. I don't want no makeup.
Comfort. Comfort is the key. It's the key to happiness.
Man, ask your wife. She knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, I see it every day at about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. She comes home. There's one thing that comes off first, and it's not her left tennis shoe, Miss Pat.
I know, baby. It's some two buckles on the back, and I got a whole seat stuck in my back, and I have to come up out of it. You hear me? I hate bras, and you know, that's one of the things I fight with. Am I famous? Is anybody going to know me? I ask myself that every day. And my mother's like, yes, Pat. Yeah, I said, they ain't going to notice me. Time I get out of the car. Mid-power.
All right, last question right now. And by the way, you can see Miss Pat at Moon Tower Comedy Festival this Thursday, Paramount Theater, 9:30. Go to austintheater.org for tickets. What do you love about stand-up comedy, Miss Pat?
The freedom. The freedom. And I'm a convicted felon. It don't check my background. I love the freedom to say whatever the hell I want to say. And I love it. I mean, it's been my healing for the last 20 years. I love stand-up.
There it is. I cannot recommend the stand-up enough. The memoir called Rabbit, The Miss Pat Show, 3 seasons out now on BET Plus. You can actually stream through Amazon Prime as well. Miss Pat Settles It, which is on BET. It's essentially Judge Judy, but it's Miss Pat with more real-life sorts of problems. The Pat Down with Miss Pat podcast. And yes, she is bringing your girl Done Made It Tour to Moon Tower Comedy Festival this Thursday here in Austin at the Paramount Theater, 9:30 show. Go to austintheater.org for tickets. Miss Pat, real pleasure. The 2-year wait was worth it. Thank you so much for the time today. Best of luck with things.
I sure hope so. Thank you so much.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, I have a couple of airline stories for you, including a predicted change that's going to make half of you happy while infuriating the other half.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for...
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your daily look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, we'll provide a story that gives you a sense of optimism and has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. And we start today's version of Where Are We At in Society in our friendly skies. The airline industry, which has become a giant dumpster fire with wings over the last few years, continues to provide material week after week, month after month, and year after year. Thankfully, today's stories don't necessarily have to do with our airplanes falling apart, which has become far too common a theme in the last year and a half or so. Instead, I do have one story that some are going to see as a sign that we're headed to a great place as a society, whereas others are going to be royally pissed. What do you think about the ability to recline your seat on a flight? Very polarizing topic on airplanes. Especially in economy, seems like a bit of a jerk move, especially if the person behind you is tall at all. And tall isn't even that tall necessarily. I'm 6 feet, and when I'm in economy and somebody leans their seat back, puts me in a bad spot, let's just say. Business class, a little bit less bad. First class, you do what you please. Take your pants off if you want to in first class, I guess. Theoretically, don't do that for real. If you're in first class and pin it on me, that's your fault. That's your poor decision making. But as far as the seat being leaned back in the peasant classes, it's a tough call. It is a situation by situation basis, in my opinion. But we've seen videos of people getting in fights over this thing. I've always said it's hard to get too upset with a person who leans their seat back if that option exists. So if the airlines really want to do something about it, then they should just make sure that their seats all stay upright. By the way, people lean their seats back for a variety of reasons, I guess. Comfort being one, but more to try and get some sleep. I've always been a tray back, table down, lay my head into my arms like I'm sleeping in 10th grade geometry. Yeah, I slept a lot in 10th grade geometry. But that is a pretty comfortable sleep, in my opinion. I know some people prefer the neck pillows, though. So perhaps based on this next report, you may want to ensure the ability to sleep upright by getting that window seat so you can lean up against the cabin of the airplane. That is because, according to William McGee, who is a senior fellow for aviation and travel at the American Economic Liberties Project, he told Condé Nast Traveler that the reclining seat could be done away with altogether in the economy class amid concerns over the amount of space that each person has. Quote, "This trend has been occurring for several years now, and I think it will continue. Lighter seats are what airlines want because the cost of jet fuel, they're always looking to reduce weight on board. The logic goes that non-reclining seats require fewer mechanical bells and whistles, thereby reducing their overall weight. That in turn lightens the overall load on airplanes, with every seemingly minuscule pound adding up." Philip Baum, who is visiting professor of aviation security at the UK's Coventry University, said there's no question that reclining seats are potential triggers for unruly behavior for a variety of reasons. There are numerous in-flight fights that are the result of passengers leaning their seats back in a manner that the person behind them deems intrusive. But as I said, how intrusive can it be when the airline itself allows it? This past fall, an airline passenger, was filmed defending her right to recline against a passenger who kept pushing her seat upright. Most of the experts that the New York Post interviewed for this article agree that just discontinuing the reclining seat in economy is the best path forward here. Take away the option, you take away the problem. Yeah, are some people going to be pissed off about this? Absolutely. And I don't completely fault them for that, because you become accustomed to certain luxuries, certain comforts, even in the peasant class, and now that's going away. Hey, at least they're not going to make these things feel like metal folding chairs yet. That could be happening too. After all that cushioning, seemingly not a whole lot of weight. When you add all that padding together, weight-wise, it's a significant amount that will help airlines save on gas, because that's what this is all about. It's not about keeping us from one another's throats. If they did that, they wouldn't treat us as they do when we're all trying to fly, unless you're in first class. Business class to a lesser degree. The airlines have shown exactly how much they care about us with their actions. Ignore their words, with their actions. Gosh, for decades now. By the way, these aviation safety experts say that there is an overall trend of dwindling economy class luxuries. That includes no more complimentary bag checks for a lot of airlines, no more meals, of course, and the inability to select your seat. By the way, Spirit and Allegiant, the cheapest of airlines, did away with reclined seating years ago, and they don't have a class. You're all peasants, according to Spirit and Allegiant. You may not realize this, but even Delta, United, American, and Southwest actually scaled back how much each seat could recline a few years ago. They cut it in half from 4 inches of recline to 2. I feel like somebody needs to be bargaining on behalf of the peasant class here. Like, if you're going to take all of this away from the peasant class, can you at least give them, I don't know, smoking back? Can we get a smoking section in the peasant class? Since they've got nothing else going for them, at least they can get that endorphin release by burning a heater down in the very back of the plane. It's going to be well ventilated. We are probably figuring out a way to separate you from the rest of us. Those of you who get that much joy out of sucking one down mid-flight. But that's a concession, right? Losing out on the ability to lean your seat back and completely inconvenience the 6-foot passenger behind you. Something else that would help with reducing the overall weight of flights, helping to save gas, how about a weight limit? I know this is going to be, this is not going to be well received by America, because America is full of fatzos, but over a certain amount of weight, certain height and weight, let's say. We're not going to stereotype you. We're not going to discriminate if you're just tall. You can't help tall. You can help the fat thing a little bit more. If you're over a certain height and weight, you either have to buy that extra seat or no seat at all. See, I didn't go ban you outright. That would be cruel. But this gets back into the whole spillover effect thing that comes up on this show from time to time. If you can't fit in your seat as defined by the creases and armrests and the room in front of you, that chair that soon won't be able to recline backwards, you got to buy an extra seat. This is basic math here if we really want to think about it. There's a lot of resistance to this, even though those of us who aren't in that category have to suffer from time to time. Why is it that the extremely overweight person always ends up in that middle seat too? Wouldn't they do themselves a favor? not going to say go aisle, because at that point, you're going to be getting saddlebag checked by the rolling cart that the cocktail waitresses in the sky are pushing along the aisle. But how about sitting up against the window? That'll help everybody, right? You included? You can smash up against that cabin wall. Make as much room as possible for that other person. I don't know. Probably just crazy talk by me. That is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. A couple of quick programming reminders. Tomorrow is a Wednesday. That means I'll be spending some time with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. And stay tuned later in the week. Brad Williams, very funny comedian, is going to be in town for Moon Tower Comedy Festival, performing at the Paramount on Friday night. He and I have an extended conversation on stand-up, of course, but also his beloved Denver Broncos. And Brad Williams is having a moment right now in terms of his popularity. Going to talk with him about that and more. Until then, thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the day and night, and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellis.